Chapter 13. The warning klaxons were still hooting away in the Hyperion's hangar. But inside the heavy armor and claustrophobic confines of a Warhound combat mech, the noise was reduced to a dull roar. Keeping one eye on the status pre-check and the other on the real-time orbital view of Focal Point 2, Cruikshank finished strapping into the cockpit and wondered when the orders would come. Wondered, too, what exactly those orders would consist of. The pre-check had turned green, and the klaxons had finally turned the hell off, when Horner's image popped up on the comm display. "Okay, Emperor Valerian was finally able to get through to Artanis," the Admiral said. "The good news is that Artanis has agreed not to demolish Point 2 without getting a good look and some decent samples." Mentally, Cruikshank shook his head. The whole rationale behind getting Dominion boots on the ground had been that Valerian needed the Protoss to hold back while he worked things out with Artanis. Cruikshank's force was supposed to make sure they did exactly that, whether they liked it or not. He'd been looking forward to kicking some Protoss butt. Now, apparently, that wasn't going to happen. "The bad news," Horner continued, "is that Artanis can't get through to his troops. Their shuttle was hit by a couple of mutalisks on its way down, which apparently took out both its psionic boosters."
"You're joking," Cruikshank said, frowning. "Is that even possible?"
"Well, it's either that or crazed psiolisks are mucking with them," Horner said. "Something seems to be mucking with their warp fields, too. They couldn't get the warp prisms to work, which is why they used a shuttle. Doesn't matter. What matters is that Artanis can't get through to them, so you're going down to deliver the message. Artanis has recorded it, and I've downloaded it to your Warhound."
"And if the Protoss refuse to listen?" Cruikshank asked hopefully.
Maybe there would be at least a little butt-kicking.
"They shouldn't," Horner said. "Artanis put enough ID and clearance codes in his message to choke a Leviathan." "Understood, sir," Cruikshank said.
So if all they were doing was delivering a message, why was a third of his force heading to the surface?
"So is the rest of the force standing down?"
"You're not seeing the big picture, Colonel," Horner said grimly. "If for some reason the Protoss do refuse to accept these new orders, we need to make sure they leave the chamber intact until our people can examine it." He raised his eyebrows. "However, we have to do that."
"Understood, sir," Cruikshank said again, feeling his heart rate pick up. "Don't worry, we'll make sure we get to that chamber first."
"Good," Horner said. "Get down there, and good luck."
"Yes, sir."
Cruikshank turned and got the Warhound striding toward the dropship, a tight smile creasing his face. Protoss being the stubborn SOBs that they were, there was a good chance they wouldn't believe he was really carrying their hierarch's orders. In which case, he was going to get to do some butt-kicking after all. He could hardly wait.
"They are creatures of beauty, Emperor Valerian Mengsk," Zagara said, her gravelly psionic voice sounding almost wistful. "They have an awareness and sentience, but not in the way of Terrans or Zerg. They see to the core of existence, to the deepest level of life. Their purpose is to find and nurture that life."
She seemed to grow a little taller.
"Your destruction of so many of them was a crime against the entire universe."
"The lives of my people were at risk," Valerian reminded her, trying to hold his temper. Zagara simply would not accept even the possibility that her Adastra might have turned into killers.
"Besides, you created this group. You surely still remember how to do that."
"Our knowledge is of no use without Zelnaga strands," she said. "All were used. There is no more."
"You can't get the Adastra to breed."
"We do not yet know whether they can do so," she said. "Abathur believes that someday they may develop that ability."
"Your spawning pools and hatcheries don't work?"
"They are designed for Zerg and Zerg variants," Zagara said. "As yet, they have proved unable to recreate or generate Zelnaga essence. The Zelnaga had a depth of molecular and quantum complexity that we still do not understand.
I see, Valerian murmured. So in theory, if the Dominion and the Protoss could destroy all the Adastra and Sciolisks, that would be the end of it. Provided that someone could prove to his satisfaction that Zagara's Adastra were indeed the creatures that had attacked Halkman's survey team. Whether Valerian could then prove that to Zagara's satisfaction was an entirely different question. If not, it could make the logistics of getting off Gist extremely problematic. But he had no choice. Artanis hadn't said it in so many words, but Valerian had the strong suspicion that his presence on the surface might be the only thing that was keeping the Hierarch from ordering a full incineration. Furthermore, if Artanis was right, if Zagara was indeed playing them with an eye toward using the Sciolisks in a new war, then Valerian would not only stand back and not interfere, but might feel morally obligated to assist the Protoss in their reign of destruction. But only if he was absolutely certain that annihilation was necessary. So he would stay and talk and listen. At least until Cruikshank's team had examined the .2 chamber and taken some samples. Maybe until Hawkman's team did the same at .3. Maybe even longer than that, if necessary. And if Zagara refused to believe and Artanis refused to wait, he would cross that bridge when he arrived. Cruikshank's dropships were halfway to the surface when the word came that the Protoss were under attack. "Where the hell did they all come from?" Cruikshank asked, glaring at the image from the dropship's lower scope. The foliage on the rolling hills outside .2 was pretty heavy, but it wasn't that heavy. How had all those damn Zergs suddenly appeared?
Were they all inside the mesa?
Near as we can tell, the only ones that came out after the Protoss knocked down the trees were a few of the new species Halkman's team identified, Horner said grimly. They're so-called Sciolisks. The rest apparently sneaked in from the trees around the Protoss. Cruikshank felt his lip twist. Sneak wasn't a word he was accustomed to using with Zerg. There were a few sneaky species, but most lower-level types just charged in like brainless bulldozers. Like they were doing right now, in fact, with the Zerglings, Roaches, and Hydralisks doing their damnedest to overwhelm the small Protoss force.
How bad is it? He asked. I'm losing details to the trees and acid burn smoke.
It's bad, Horner said. Artanis is as much in the dark as we are, but it looks like a slaughter in progress. We started off picking up the electromagnetic signatures of 10 Templar Psi blades and 10 Narazim warp blades. Now we're down to 6 and 7. Cruikshank squeezed his hand into a fist. The battle had been underway for maybe 3 minutes, and the Protoss had already lost 4 Templar and 3 Narazim? Unbelievable.
What the hell is Zagara throwing at them?
Zagara claims it's not her, Horner said. She says it's not the local broodmother either.
Right, Cruikshank growled. The local Zerglings just happened to pick today to declare independence. And sentience.
I don't believe it either, Horner said. But right now, the who doesn't matter. What matters is that the Protoss are in trouble, and you're the only ones who can do anything to help.
Don't worry, sir, Cruikshank promised darkly.
So instead of kicking Protoss' butt, he'd now been tasked with pulling their butts out of the frying pan. Damn and damn again.
We'll get there as fast as we can, and do whatever we can.
I know you will, Horner said. Good luck, Colonel, and watch yourselves. The Protoss are important, but your ultimate responsibility is to the Dominion and its people.
Understood, sir, Cruikshank said. I'll contact you again when this is over.
He keyed off the comm and switched to short range.
All right, troopers, you heard the Admiral. This is now a rescue mission. We hit the ground running. We pull out any Protoss who are still alive, and we pan-fry every damn Zerg in sight.
4 minutes later, the dropship slammed into the ground, their landing legs howling in protest at the impact. Cruikshank made sure he and his warhound led the way from his dropship, with the three Goliaths the first ones out of theirs. To find that they were too late. It was like a scene straight out of hell. The whole area was crawling with Zerg. Banelings, roaches, Zerglings, Hydralisks. Their claws slicing at the handful of remaining High Templar and Dark Templar. Poison darts shredding flesh and clothing. Acid blasts eating into the grass and trees and filling the air with choking smoke. There were dead Zerg everywhere, sprawled on top of one another or intermixed with dead Protoss. Two robotic Protoss sentries hovered over the carnage, their automated systems trying futilely to protect the warriors. Near the mesa, lying shattered on its side among the downed trees that had once blocked the cavern entrance, was a Stalker. But just because the rescue mission had gone to hell didn't mean the Dominion was just going to pack up and leave.
"Attack at will!" Cruikshank shouted to his troops. "Find any pockets of resistance and reinforce them. I'm checking out that Stalker. Reapers, cover me. And watch the sky. We could have Mutalisks showing up at any time."
His warhound strode toward the downed Stalker, sweeping away Zerglings that got too close and firing bursts from its railguns at every Hydralisk in range. A Baneling scuttled toward him. Another burst from his railguns blew it to acid-spewing shreds.
"Watch it, Colonel!" one of the Reapers snapped. "You got acid on your left leg!"
Cruikshank cursed under his breath as he glanced at his status display. The neutralizer spray had caught most of it in time, but the edges of the splash were still sizzling. Another shot of neutralizer took care of it. There was probably some residual corrosion going on in the grooves and cracks where the spray couldn't reach, which would eventually collapse the leg if it wasn't dealt with. But there was no time for that. The leg would last the rest of the mission, and right now, that was all Cruikshank cared about.
"Mutalisks!" someone shouted. "Four Beta High!"
Cruikshank looked at the location. Two of the Nasties were arrowing down from the sky, clearly intent on taking out one of the remaining Protoss sentries. After glancing target locks on both of them, he sent a pair of haywire missiles screaming into the air. A third Mutalisk, swooping in at the edge of his vision, fell to a burst of Hellfire scatter missiles from one of the Goliaths. Another pair of Zerglings had emerged from the pack and were slicing at Cruikshank's damaged leg. Blasting them with his railgun, he kept going. From the Stalker's lack of motion, he guessed that the Dark Templar who was melded into the machinery was as dead as the machinery itself. But as he reached it, the Narazim's eyes opened to slits, and the head turned a little to look up at the Warhound's cockpit.
"You came,"
a weak Protoss voice said in Cruikshank's head.
"Yeah, we're here,"
Cruikshank said, wincing at the banality of the words. Yes, the Dominion forces had arrived, for all the damn good that was going to do most of the Protoss.
"Hang on, you've got a tree across one of your legs. I'll get it off and take you back to our dropship."
"There is no time,"
the Dark Templar said.
"You must destroy the chamber, or you and your Terrans will die alongside us."
"I can't do that,"
Cruikshank said, glancing at the status reports coming in on his TAC display. Three Templar and four Narazim still alive, and more Zerg pouring into the area. The corrosion problem in his Warhound's leg was getting worse, with the computer estimating he had 10 more minutes before it became useless. A slaughter, all right, and it was far from over.
"Sorry, but I have orders to take it intact."
"You cannot," the Dark Templar said. "Even now they are abandoning it."
Cruikshank frowned at the cavern entrance, keying in the Warhound's telescopics. There wasn't much light in there, but there was enough to show a line of red-spotted Psylisks coming down the ramp, each pair manhandling a milky white pod between them.
"I did not believe the Terran report that this new Zerg could attack with psionic power,"
the Dark Templar continued, his voice starting to fade.
"But it's true. They draw other Zerg to the battlefield and to the attack. They then focus their power on us, one by one, with a force that overwhelms even Dark Templar, opening us to destruction."
Cruikshank hissed between his teeth. And if the Psylisks were able to get those pods out of there while he and his team were otherwise engaged, God only knew where they would turn up next. Emperor Valerian wanted the chamber taken intact, but even emperors didn't always get what they wanted.
All right, he said. What's your name, soldier?
I am Sagaya.
All right, Sagaya, Crookshank said. You stay here and keep alive. I'll be back as soon as I can.
He straightened up, wondering how many of the damn Sialisks were in there. Wondering, too, whether his railguns and missile launchers would run out of ammo and his leg run out of function before he found out.
There is no need to go inside, Sagaya said. Their destruction already awaits. I have sent in a disruptor. Any perceived attack upon it will cause its detonation.
Ah, Crookshank said.
Nasty weapons, disruptors. But in this case, exactly what he needed.
I think I can accommodate it. Attention all units. I'm about to trigger a Protoss disruptor inside the mesa. Watch out for flying rock.
After locking onto a spot as far up the ramp as he could see, he fired off a haywire. It blasted its way inside, nearly taking out a pair of Sialisks and their pod along the way. It reached the first switchback and blew, lighting up the entire inside. Crookshank held his breath. The mesa didn't exactly split apart, as Crookshank had thought it might, but it was close. The disruptor's blast blew a dozen massive holes in the top, throwing dirt and rock and vegetation high into the air and shaking the ground under the warhound's feet. An instant later, a fire burst roared out of the cave opening, blasting every bush and tree in its path and knocking Crookshank's warhound onto its back. For a long moment, he just lay there, aching where he'd been thrown against his webbing, wincing as the wind and fire blasted and swirled outside his cockpit's steel glass canopy. Slowly, the maelstrom faded away, and the swirling storm of leaves and dirt and branches subsided. Carefully, he got the warhound's arms under it and levered the mech back to its feet. There was a slight lurch as the outer plating of its damaged left leg cracked, but the main support structure held. Moving slowly, mindful of his balance amid the piles of debris, he turned and surveyed the battlefield. It was a mess. Everyone in sight, Terran, Protoss, and Zerg, had been thrown flat onto the ground. Two of Crookshank's three Goliaths were slowly getting back to their feet, both showing signs of serious damage. The third lay motionless, its legs torn apart, its Hellfire launcher crushed, one of its autocannons half-melted from heat buildup. Crookshank's med readout on the pilot indicated he was alive, but just barely. Elsewhere on the field, some of the Marines were also picking themselves up off the ground. None of the five Reapers were visible, and only two of their med readouts indicated life. The Zerg were slowly starting to move as well, but not to attack. For the most part, they were standing up, shaking their massive heads as if dazed and confused, and just looking around. Crookshank kept his finger on the Warhound's railgun trigger, but none of the creatures made any hostile move. They all simply stood still for a moment, as if deciding what to do, then turned and wandered or staggered away. And as they cleared the field, Crookshank saw three Protoss slowly regain their feet. Three. He ran his displays through another 360 just to be sure. Then, huffing out a sigh, he keyed his long-range comm.
This is Crookshank, he said. Victory achieved. Enemy is yielding the field. Rescue mission?
He swallowed hard.
Not so much.
Zagara lashed her arms through the air in front of her as if trying to crush someone.
I do not understand.
12 Terrans dead,
Valerian bit out, for once not even trying to fake a diplomatic bearing.
19 Protoss dead. Do you still claim these Sialisks aren't hostile?
These cannot be Adastra, Zagara insisted. They are completely and inherently peaceful.
Zergling-sized creatures with semi-hydralisk form, light brown with red highlights, triple dorsal patterns of bright red spots?
Adastra are not of that form.
Are you sure? Valerian pressed. Have you looked into the pods recently?
Zagara's claws were still working.
No one has looked inside, she said. Not since they were encased in the nutrients. They are still maturing.
Then you really don't know what they might have become.
We'll not listen further, Abathur said suddenly. Terran organism lies for destruction of swarm. We'll not listen further.
After turning his back, he strode toward the chamber entrance. Valerian looked at Zagara, expecting her to order him back. Apparently not. Abathur passed the Ravagers, still waiting in ominous silence, and disappeared elsewhere in the structure. Maybe Zagara had decided he had nothing further to add to the conversation. Maybe she'd decided that the entire conversation was coming to a close. Maybe she was right.
I'm going to leave now, Valerian said, standing up. I trust you won't try to stop me.
For a long second, he thought Zagara was going to do exactly that. Her head drew back, her eyes glittering at him. Then, some of the tension seemed to flow out of her.
What would such action accomplish? She pointed out. I seek to avoid war. Unless I can persuade you to the truth, that effort will come to nothing.
You can't persuade me over Queen, just as I can't persuade you, Valerian said. Only truth itself can do that. I will continue to seek out the truth as long as I can, but in the end...
He left the sentence unfinished.
Then go, Zagara said. Seek the truth.
I will, Valerian said, some of his resolve slipping.
She was so unlike any Zerg he'd ever met. That alone had been worth investigating. That alone gave him pause. And she seemed so sincere. But he'd given her a fair chance. More of a chance than Artanis had given her. Certainly more than Valerian's father, Arcturus, would have given her. Emperor Arcturus would have declared war and begun his assault hours ago. No. What happened from this point on, Valerian's conscience was clear.
And you will find it, Zagara promised. I hope that you will find it, while there is still time.
Somewhat to Valerian's surprise, no attack came as his dropship lifted through the cone and headed away from the surface. He'd barely reached the 1,000-meter mark when a full squadron of wraiths swooped in and escorted him the rest of the way to the Hyperion. He arrived on the bridge to find Matt on the comm with Artanis.
I understand your position, Hierarch Artanis,
the Admiral was saying as Valerian entered. He caught Valerian's eye and waved him over.
I'll relay your comments and suggestions to Emperor Valerian as soon as he arrives.
Very well, Admiral Matthew Horner,
Artanis's voice came from the speaker.
Be certain he also understands that my patience is not unlimited.
I will, Hierarch, Matt promised. Admiral Horner, out.
He keyed off the comm.
Emperor Valerian, he said, turning to Valerian. I'm glad to see you alive and unharmed.
I'm a bit surprised by it myself.
Valerian gestured toward the comm.
What news from the Protoss?
They've got their front toes right on the line and are leaning over it, Matt said darkly. Artanis is about half a dam away from ordering a full bore assault on Gist.
Valerian curled his hand into a fist.
With our people still down there.
Well, the survey team anyway, Matt said. Crookshank's force was able to make some running repairs on their dropships before our replacements arrived. They're on their way up.
His lip twisted.
What's left of them anyway?
Yes, Valerian murmured. At least we made out better than the Protoss.
Only because we weren't on the ground as long, Matt said bluntly. You saw Crookshank's report.
I got the basics.
Then you saw his take on the Sciolisk's strategy.
Valerian nodded.
Gang up on the Templar and the Narazim one at a time, break their combat concentration, then slice and dice.
Or let the rest of the Zerg do it for them, Matt said. And that doesn't even count the effect the psionic attacks had on our people. Relatively minimal, at least compared with the effect on Protoss, but still a potentially serious game changer.
It is indeed,
Valerian agreed.
Sagara still claims that neither she nor the local broodmother was in charge of that attack.
She claimed that about the survey team's little fracas, too, Matt reminded him. Either she's lying, or...
You suppose the Silasks themselves could be orchestrating the attacks?
That's about the only other explanation, Valerian said. Problem is, it's pretty much impossible to prove one way or another. Not without a tap into basic Zerg-to-Zerg communications.
Which neither we or the Protoss have, so what's our next move?
Same as before, Valerian said. We get the survey team to Focal Point 3 and hope they can finally get us some real samples.
Ah, Matt paused. You realize that whatever game is being played and whoever's playing it, Point 3 is the obvious choice for our next move. If they want Halkman's team out of the way, it'll take very little effort.
Yes, I've been thinking about that, Valerian said. I know we've got some Psi disruptors aboard. You gave those Psi block variants to Halkman and Cray. Do we by any chance have any Psi emitters?
Matt blinked. I would think that drawing Zerg to us would be an extraordinarily bad idea right now. Despite the tension, Valerian had to smile at the Admiral's carefully official tone. The experts still didn't know whether Psi emitters induced a queen or broodmother to send her Zerg in that direction, or whether they worked directly on the nearest batch of lower-level Zerg. But the results were the same. A mass of nasty aliens converging on the emitter's location. The devices had occasionally been useful during the war. They'd also been used by Valerian's father to destroy the Confederate capital planet of Tarsonis, which had paved the way for Arcturus's takeover and his creation of the Terran Dominion. Highly dangerous devices and not to be taken lightly.
Relax, I haven't gone that crazy, he assured Matt. I was thinking of landing 100 clicks or so from Point 3 and seeing if we can divert the local Zerg away from the survey team.
Ah, Matt said, his face clearing. Well, I doubt there's anything like that aboard any of our ships. But I'll bet the techs could cobble something together before the team gets there.
Which is in...
Matt glanced at the bridge chrono.
About 5 hours.
Call the techs and get them started, Valerian said. And get an estimate of when they'll have something up and running.
Admiral?
The tactical officer called tensely from his seat in a sensor wraparound.
You'll want to see this, sir.
Valerian crossed to the wraparound, Matt right beside him.
Those Leviathans, sir,
the TAC officer said, pointing to several of the displays.
The ones that have been keeping an eye on us and the Protoss ships? They're all heading to the surface.
All to different spots, looks like, Matt murmured. The broodmothers, you think?
That would make sense, Valerian said grimly. Zagara has probably warned them all by now that negotiations have broken down. They want to be ready to evacuate if necessary.
Taking who knows what with them, Matt said. If Zagara wants to sneak out some Silasks, there's no way we can intercept and search 6 Leviathans.
7, sir, the TAC officer corrected. Including the one we followed in from Core Hall.
I'd forgotten that one, Matt said, leaning closer. Is it doing anything?
No, sir, still just sitting there.
Not surprising, Valerian said. The situation's unstable enough as it is. Hopefully Zagara's not going to rock the boat by running to her Leviathan and taking off.
She might if she thought it was worth the gamble, Matt pointed out. Say, if she had some Silasks and a captured ghost she could turn Abathur loose on. Valerian's eyes flickered to one of the other displays. The survey team's dropship was still cutting atmosphere toward Point 3, with no imminent threats in sight.
We'll keep a close eye on her, he said.
And speaking of rocking the boat, one more little tidbit. Matt indicated the display that showed the various hotspots in the Protoss ships. Looks like Artanis is starting to power up his purifier beam.
Valerian mouthed a curse. Getting ready to incinerate Gist.
Shall I call and ask him to stand down?
Matt asked. At least until we get the survey team out of there. Valerian looked back at the Leviathans moving across the starscape. Matt was right. If one or more of the huge creatures was tasked with taking off with a group of Sialisks, there was no way the Dominion and Protoss forces could stop all of them. And that couldn't be allowed to happen. Not after such a graphic demonstration of the devastation the new Zerg could deliver to both Terrans and Protoss. They had to be defeated.
"No," he told Matt. "Just remind him about our people on the ground and ask that he keep us informed of any planned action."
He hesitated.
"And then, begin prepping all our own space-to-ground weaponry."
Matt's eyes widened.
"Valerian, sir."
"That's an order, Admiral,"
Valerian cut in, putting the full weight of his position into his voice. Matt stiffened to attention.
"Understood, Your Excellency," he said, matching Valerian's formal tone.
Valerian frowned. Matt never called him Your Excellency anymore. Not since Valerian had flatly told him and everyone else not to. Was the Admiral's use of his father's favored honorific some kind of not-so-subtle hint? A deliberate reference to Emperor Arcturus's coldly violent way of doing things? If it was, the Admiral was going to love Valerian's next order.
"You will also prep the Yamato cannon," he continued. "Its target, should it prove necessary, will be Focal Point 3. You'll prep a small evac force to get the team out of there if required."
"If necessary, and if there's time?" Matt asked pointedly.
"If there's time," Valerian agreed.
"Understood, Your Excellency."
Deliberately, Valerian turned away from the Admiral's gaze. Definitely a reference to Emperor Arcturus. On one level, Valerian had to agree. Wholesale slaughter, wanton collateral damage, those had been the hallmarks of his father's reign. They'd been the very things Valerian had pledged to change about the Dominion. And now, he was following squarely in his father's blood-stained footsteps. He could only hope that this was just an aberration, a momentary bump on the high road he had promised to take. Because the alternative was that he'd been fooling himself all along. Maybe there was simply no way to make war into something civilized. Maybe warfare was always going to be a matter of us versus them. Maybe survival would always be winner take all, loser be annihilated. Valerian had always denounced that philosophy, loudly, publicly, and sincerely. Some people had praised him for his decency. Others had criticized his naivete. Which of those, he wondered, were right? Once he'd thought he knew. Now, he wasn't nearly so certain. Today, perhaps, he would find out.
Chapter 14. Among its other duties, the implant in Tanya's brain was supposed to help smooth out her emotions, lowering the peaks, as it were, and raising the valleys. It wasn't doing that job very well today. There was also a whole pharmacy of drugs available for her to take, everything from alcohol to hab to secret military cocktails that didn't even have official names. Those also promised to get her on an even keel and keep her there. She had no interest in touching any of them. Besides, even if she wanted to, she wouldn't know which class of drug to take. Her emotions were running a full hill-hugger ride from white-hot fury at being lied to, straight down to a black depression at being lied to, and back up to fury again. The only constant in her mood was the fact that she'd been lied to. How could Ulavu do that to her? Out of the corner of her eye, she caught someone approaching. She tensed, but it was only Aaron.
"Can I talk to you a minute?"
the other woman asked, her forehead wrinkled in thought. Tanya's first instinct was to say no. Her heart and soul were aching, and all she wanted was to curl up within herself, alone, until the ache went away. But Aaron's expression wasn't that of a woman who just felt like a casual chat. It was something important, maybe even important enough to provide some mental distraction.
"Sure,"
Tanya said, suppressing a sigh.
"What's up?" "It's this report?"
Aaron said, pulling out her data pad and dropping into the next seat. Sometime in the past couple of hours, she'd taken off her armor, probably with Wist's help, and looked a lot fresher and more comfortable than Tanya currently felt.
This transcription of Emperor Valerian's conversation with Over Queen Zagara? Did you read it?
Not yet, Tanya said. Is there a problem?
I don't know,
Aaron said, calling up a section of the report and handing her datapad to Tanya.
Zagara claims that these Adastra things, they're supposedly what we saw in the pods, can't go rogue and crazy and attack people like the Siolisks did.
People claim all sorts of things are impossible, Tanya said, skimming the section. Someone once told me friends don't lie to each other. Aaron blinked.
My point is that I got to thinking about the Siolisks and what we saw in the pods. You've studied Zerg anatomy, right?
I've looked inside a few, Tanya said. Actually, she'd seen way more than her fair share of Zerg guts during her training. Marines only needed to know where the weakest part of a Zerg's exterior was. She needed to know which of their innards would burn best.
There wasn't a lot left to see after Diz finished with the pods, if that's where you're going. I know that, Aaron said. And Zagara says that the Adastra use Zelnaga essence rather than Zerg varieties, so their ontogeny might be different from the normal spawning pool version of...
Their what?
Their ontogeny, Aaron repeated. Their life cycle from fertilization to full adult. Zerg normally don't go through a metamorphosis stage, while the Adastra almost have to if...
You're losing me, Tanya said, fighting back a surge of anger. She really wasn't in the mood for a technical discussion.
Why does it need a metamorphosis? Because what we saw in the pods didn't look like the final Siolisks, Aaron said. But that's my point. The Siolisks do look like Zerg, or at least some sort of midway point between Zerglings and Hydralisks. What are the odds that would happen with an unknown creature melded with non-Zerg genetics?
Tanya shook her head.
Sorry, but this is way over my head. I don't know anything about Onto whatever. All I know is that the pod things and the Siolisks both had the red dot pattern down their backs. As far as I know, no other Zerg strain has anything even close to that. And remember that six of the pods were empty, like your metamorphosis had finished and those were the ones that had gotten out.
We ran into a lot more than just six Siolisks, Aaron pointed out.
And I didn't see any trace of nutrient fluids in the empty pods.
Because Diz torched the place, Tanya reminded her patiently. Look, I don't know what Zagara is claiming and I don't care. The Siolisks are killing machines and they need to be exterminated. Period. She gestured at Aaron's untouched jumpsuit. You're just lucky you had Olavu at your back in there.
I don't know what Olavu had to do with it, Aaron said, sounding puzzled.
It was Wist and Diz who kept them off us. She made a face.
Off me, anyway. Olavu didn't make it through nearly as well.
Tanya frowned, craning her neck to look around the cabin. Olavu was nowhere to be seen.
Where'd he go?
She asked.
Medical bay, Aaron said,
nodding to the sectioned-off compartment in the dropship's stern.
Probably changing his dressings. Well, thanks anyway.
She stood up.
Wait a minute,
Tanya said, still trying to process all this.
You say Olavu got hurt in the battle, but you didn't?
That's right, Aaron said.
Like I said, Wist and Diz were really good at shooting them when they got too close.
Too close to you, not too close to Olavu. Aaron wrinkled her nose.
Yes, I already said that.
Yeah, Tanya said.
Thanks.
For another moment, Aaron just stood there, probably wondering if Tanya was going unstable. Then, with a silent farewell nod, she walked away, leaving Tanya with a seriously confusing puzzle. She turned it over in her mind for a few minutes, but it was quickly clear that she wasn't going to solve it without more information. And there was, unfortunately, only one place to get what she needed. She resisted a few minutes more, but in the end, she sighed, unstrapped, and headed back to the medical bay. Olavu was there, just as Aaron had said. He had removed his tunic and was carefully placing a bandage across his lower torso. More bandages were visible elsewhere across his upper body. Lying at his feet were five discarded bandages, each coated with dark, purple Protoss blood. He'd been torn up all right. Tanya hadn't even noticed. The Protoss looked up as she entered, and for a moment they locked eyes. "You have shunned me since the battles at Focal Point One," he said at last. "Your mind has also been closed to me, as it is even now. Please tell me how I have failed you." Bluntness, Tanya had always felt, deserved to be answered in kind.
"Sure,"
she said.
"But we should start with proper introductions.
Am I addressing a Templar or a Nerazim?" She had the sense of a mental sigh.
"How many know?"
Tanya frowned.
"I assumed everyone except me."
"No. Only Sergeant Foster Cray knows. For only he was aware when we first met the Silasks." He ducked his head in an almost embarrassed-looking sort of half-bow.
"And now you also know."
"Yes," Tanya said, determined not to let her anger get sidetracked by remorse. He'd betrayed her trust, and she was furious at him, and she was going to damn well stay that way.
"You haven't answered my question."
"I am Nerazim. With the loss of the Kala wrought by the war, the Nerazim ability to access void energies makes us more versatile than most Templar."
"Why do you need to be more versatile?"
"Is that what you wish to know, Tanya Caulfield?" he asked. "Or do you wish to know why you were lied to?"
"Why I was lied to?" Tanya shook her head.
"No.
You don't get to phrase it that way. The question is why you lied to me. And yes, I want to know."
"I had orders," Ulavu said, and again Tanya sensed a mental sigh.
"I had a mission. I was honor-bound to accomplish it. You surely understand honor and duty."
"Don't change the subject," Tanya growled. "What kind of mission was it? I assumed you Protoss already knew about the Ghost Program."
"Hierarch Artanis needed no information," Ulavu agreed. "What he wished was for me to find and identify a Dominion ghost of a specific psionic power."
Tanya clenched her teeth. So she hadn't been a friend to him, or even an unknowing information source. All she'd been was some sort of high-stakes door prize.
"Let me guess. Something that had rarely been seen before, maybe? Like pyrokinesis?"
Ulavu inclined his head to the side.
"No."
For a second, Tanya thought she'd misunderstood.
"No?"
"No," he said reluctantly. "I was sent to locate and befriend a telekinetic." Tanya felt as if the floor had just been pulled out from under her. She hadn't even been a door prize?
"What are you talking about? There are two Teeks in the program right now. What was wrong with them?"
He was silent so long that she started to wonder if she'd lost contact. "I did not wish them as friends," he said at last. "They are not good souls." And now he was going to presume to judge all of humanity? This just got better and better.
"They are perfectly acceptable souls," she shot back.
"Are they?" She scowled. "No, damn it all, they really weren't. Glistrup was a manic depressive and a compulsive liar, while Mai was just an all-around mean person. No one liked them. Still, they were competent enough Teeks, if somewhat low power.
"So what did you want with them?"
"The Protoss have developed a new weapon," Ulavu said evasively. "Of only minor tactical use, but of interest to a number of us. It was hoped a Terran telekinetic would be useful in its deployment, as the human version of that ability carries unique characteristics not found in Protoss. We wish to explore what could be achieved through a partnership with such a Terran. I can say no more."
"Okay,"
Tanya said, frowning. "But the history of warfare isn't exactly choking with nice, upstanding people. You wanted a Teek, and you had Glistrup and Mai to choose from. Why didn't you pick one of them?"
"Because I knew neither would be satisfied sharing my attention and my friendship with another."
"So what? You only needed one of them, right?"
"Yes," he hesitated. "But I then would not have been able to befriend you."
Tanya glared at him.
"Oh, no," she insisted. "You aren't going to put this on me. I had nothing to do with messing up your plans or your mission." I make no such allegation, he protested. It was my choice, my decision, my failure.
Tanya gazed at him, bits and pieces of the puzzle that was Ulavu finally coming together. His abandonment by the Protoss, his rumored estrangement from Hierarch Artanis himself, his continuing but seemingly dead-end position at the Ghost Program.
That night in Dante's Circle, she said, you said you were doing research. You were looking for a Teek, weren't you?
I had recently uncovered rumors that one of those who perished on Chausara had the gift, Ulavu said. It is thought by some that such powers may follow bloodlines. I had hoped I might locate a family member in that place.
Instead, you nearly got your head taken off.
Tanya winced as the true situation in Dante's belatedly clicked. Rather, they nearly got their heads taken off.
I would not have harmed them, Ulavu assured her. I was on Core Hall 4 as a guest. I would never abuse that responsibility.
Yeah, Tanya took a deep breath.
This conversation isn't over, Ulavu. We will get back to it. But right now we have more immediate worries. Tell me about the main battle in Point 1, the one in the upstairs chamber. What happened to you and Aaron?
We were attacked, as were you, Sergeant Foster Cray and Lieutenant Dennis Halkman. He indicated the bandages across his torso.
As you see, he added ruefully, my abilities were not up to Narazim standards.
The Silisks?
Yes. I found myself distracted and was often unable to focus. If not for your ability to quickly kill the enemy, we would all have perished.
Enough reason right there to make friends with me, I guess. Tanya frowned to herself. Had she just made a joke about it?
There were more reasons than that, Ulavu said firmly.
Yes, I know.
Apparently he hadn't caught the humor. Not the first time that it happened.
The problem is—
Hello?
A tentative voice came. Tanya turned to find Whist standing in the hatchway, his eyes flicking back and forth between her and Ulavu.
Yes, she said.
Aaron said you were acting a little twitchy,
he said, taking a careful step inside.
I thought as long as I was up, I'd check on Ulavu's injuries, too.
I am healing, Ulavu assured him.
Good.
Whist cocked an eyebrow at Tanya.
How about you?
I'm fine, Tanya said.
A lie, of course, but not as much of one as she'd expected. Ulavu's betrayal still hurt terribly, but at least they'd started talking again.
I'm glad you're here, though. We were just about to tackle a serious question.
Which is?
Why Aaron is still alive?
Okay, that's not the question I was expecting, Whist said. You want to elaborate?
Tanya waved at his armor.
The Silisks got within a hair of taking you out, right?
More than once, Whist shrugged. You get used to it.
They nearly took out Diz too, and I find out now, she added, feeling a twinge of guilt. They took a solid crack at Ulavu as well. So how did Aaron get out without a scratch?
Whist opened his mouth, closed it again.
Well, Ulavu was right there. I assume you were protecting her, right?
To the best of my ability.
Ulavu gestured at his bandages.
But my ability in that battle was sorely diminished.
Exactly my point, Tanya said. Aaron had a Gauss rifle and was doing a fair amount of damage with it. But with Ulavu running at only half speed behind her, they must have had several opportunities to take her down.
But they didn't, Whist said slowly. In fact, it looks like they didn't even try. So why not?
They wanted her to survive the battle, Ulavu said, to return to Core Hall 4.
But why? Tanya persisted. They didn't care about the rest of us. Why her?
Perhaps she has been infested, Ulavu suggested grimly. She lay on the open ground several times, some of those times with her helmet off. Could spores have infested her?
Not likely, Whist said, stroking his lower lip. Infestations aren't that fast or quite that easy. And she'd certainly be put through the full grid of tests and micro scans before they let her anywhere near Core Hall again. Could it be something to do with her job? She's the only xenobiologist among us.
Wouldn't that make her the first one they'd want to kill? Tanya countered. If Zagar is hiding something, Aaron's the one who would spot it first.
Unless they're not hiding something and want her alive to confirm that, Whist snorted. But in that case, why try to kill any of us?
Exactly, Tanya said. We're getting played here, and we need to figure out what the game is.
Yeah, Whist gestured. Come on.
Where are we going? Ulavu asked.
We're grabbing Aaron and heading to the cockpit, Whist said. If we're going to have a skull session, we might as well gather all the skulls we have.
There goes another one, Emperor, the tactical officer said tautly. It's angling in, veering off now. With a conscious effort, Valerian unclenched his teeth. That was the fourth devourer to fly near the survey team's dropship in the past 2 hours. Fortunately, it was also the fourth devourer to ignore them.
You're sure it didn't get any acid on them? He asked.
It never got within range, Emperor, the officer assured him.
I guess those psi blocks are still working, Matt said, coming up behind Valerian. Handy gadgets. We may need to make them standard issue.
Assuming no one ever wants to talk to anyone, Valerian pointed out sourly, which could be very handy right now.
Yes, Matt agreed. Ironic that we can tell when it's safe for them to shut the blocks off, but we can't tell them unless they shut the blocks off.
Valerian glanced at the chrono, and it would be another 40 minutes before the next of the on-the-hour communications Matt had set up with Halkman's team. Until that time, Halkman's psi blocks would stay up. And maybe they'd stay up for a long time after that, too. The number of flying Zerg that had approached the dropship had gone up dramatically in the past couple of hours. Halkman would hardly shut off the blocks, even on schedule, if there was a Mutalisk paralleling him at the time. For that matter, even without a visual, he was taking a risk every time he shut them off. No one knew how flying Zerg hunted or what their internal sensory range was, which meant there was no way for Halkman to truly know how far away was safe enough. Which, boiled down to its essence, meant there was a good chance the survey team would remain incommunicado until it arrived at Focal Point 3.
At least they got the transcription in Crookshank's battle report, Valerian said. They've got all the information we do.
Except for the tiny little fact that the Protoss are gearing up to incinerate the planet, Matt murmured.
Valerian grimaced, and the even more ominous fact that the Dominion fleet was preparing to join in that attack. One of the most terrible duties of a commander was the job of choosing which soldiers or units to send to certain death. As Emperor, Valerian held a similar responsibility. He'd long since accepted that burden, but he would never, ever get used to it. Matt took a step closer to him.
I just came over to inform you, Your Excellency, that the Yamato cannon ramp-up is proceeding as scheduled. It should be ready by the time the survey team reaches Point 3.
So he was still pushing the whole Emperor Arcturus II thing. Fine. At this point, all Valerian could do was ignore it.
Thank you, Admiral, he said.
What's the status of the evac team?
They'll be ready before the Yamato cannon is, Matt said. Also, the psi emitter is ready, if you still want to use it.
Valerian eyed him.
You don't think we should?
There are some definite risks involved, Matt said. The techs say it should have a range of 50 clicks, so if we put it that distance from Point 3, it should draw all the Zerg away.
But? Valerian prompted.
But we don't know it'll only project to 50 clicks, Matt said. If the range is longer, it could draw one batch of Zerg straight to Point 3 even while it's drawing another batch away. Furthermore, we've never used one on a Zerg-owned planet before. There may be side effects we won't know about until we try it.
Understood, Valerian said. But the alternative is to leave the survey team on its own, or to send down Crookshank and another set of troops. We already saw how well that worked.
Yes, we did, Matt conceded. So, we deploy the emitter?
Yes, Valerian said. There's a good spot northeast of Point 3, at right angles to the dropship's current vector.
I'll give the orders, Matt said, Pulling out his comm, he strode away. "Two Mutalisks on scope, Emperor," the tactical officer put in. "Angling across the vector. Projection is they'll miss the dropship by about half a click." He looked up at Valerian. "It'll work, sir," he added quietly. "I've seen emitters in action. It'll work."
"Thank you, Commander," Valerian said. "I hope you're right."
He nodded toward the displays.
"In the meantime, keep an eye on those Mutalisks. A very close eye."
The group standing in the cockpit's hatchway remained silent as Aaron read the transcript of Valerian's conversation with Zagara, followed by Cruikshank's report of the action at Focal Point 2. Wist, who'd made sure to grab the co-pilot seat when they first entered, listened with half his attention while he peered through the canopy with the other half. The landscape below looked peaceful enough, but he didn't trust it for a minute. He didn't trust the sky, either. Twice during Aaron's recital, Diz tapped his arm and pointed at a devourer or a group of Mutalisks off toward the horizon. Fortunately, none of the creatures approached the dropship, and they were usually visible for only a minute or two before they headed off on other business. But the whole thing left Wiss with an acid taste in his mouth and a twisted knot in his gut. There was no way to know whether any of those encounters were coincidental or the result of someone keeping an eye on them. Either way, being caught in midair was not the kind of situation he wanted to find himself in.
"Okay, so that's everything we've got," he said when Aaron had finished. "The question, the same one we've had from the start, is what the hell is going on? Starting with what the Sialisks are and what the things in the pods are."
"It seems obvious that the Sialisks are there to guard the pods," Diz said. "It also strikes me that they're pretty damn rotten at their jobs."
"I beg to differ," Tanya countered. "They nearly took us down and did a number on the Protoss and Cruikshank's force."
"While still losing all the pods both times," Diz said. "I'm not saying they're not seriously nasty. I'm saying that as bodyguards, they're running 0 for 2.
"I'm still stuck on whether they're the same species," Wist said. "And I want to know what happened to the ones in the empty pods. Or, if the pods were always empty," he added to forestall Aaron's inevitable objection, "why they were in the cavern in the first place."
"Zagara stated that all the Xel'Naga essence had been used," Ilavu pointed out. "Perhaps the extra pods were meant for additional Adastra they were unable to create."
"Because they ran out of essence first?" Wist pursed his lips. "Seems like poor planning, but I guess it's possible."
"There's still Aaron's question about the Sialisks," Tanya said. "If they're a matured form of Adastra and the Adastra are from the same non-Zerg species plus Xel'Naga essence—"
"Hold it," Diz interrupted. "Check this out." He nodded at the canopy. Wist frowned. Half a dozen flying Zerg were cutting across their path straight ahead, heading northeast.
"Yeah, they're flying. So?"
"Right, they're flying," Diz said. "They're flying northeast."
"Again, so?"
"So every Zerg I've seen flying for the past hour and a half has been heading that direction," Diz said.
"You think there's a sale on premium creep or something over there?"
"These Zerg don't eat creep," Aaron said. "The plants exude nutrients—"
Yeah, I know," Diz said. "Wist, what do you think?"
"I don't know,"
Wist said, frowning at the Zerg flapping their way across the dropship's path.
"An hour and a half, you say?"
"That's when I first noticed it," Diz said. "It could have been going on longer."
"And always northeast?"
"Always northeast."
"What in the Dominion could they be running from?" Aaron murmured. "The Sialisks? Something else over there?"
Wist hissed through his teeth as it hit him.
"Oh, hell," he muttered. "They're not running from, Aaron. They're running to."
"To?" Diz looked over at Wist, and Wist saw the sudden dawning of the light.
"Oh, no, they can't be serious."
"What is it?" Aaron asked. "What's going on?"
"I think Cruikshank's landed a psi emitter," Wist told her. "How wonderfully stupid of him."
"But those devices are not safe,"
Ulavu protested.
Yeah, no kidding, Whist bit out. When did safety matter to top brass?
Or common sense, Diz added.
Okay, now you're scaring me, Aaron said. What's the problem? I thought they were used on the battlefield all the time.
They were, Whist said. And the brass loved them because they were terrific at drawing Zerg away from civilian areas.
They were also hell in a boxcar for those of us in the field, Diz said. Not only do they concentrate the enemy into a massive wall of teeth and claws, but they also erase the last bit of battle caution in those tiny little Zerg brains.
I didn't think Zerg had any battle caution, Tanya said.
It's not so much caution as positional awareness, Ulavu said. During normal combat, Zerg do not wish to run into one another, so they space themselves out somewhat. A psi emitter suppresses that awareness.
The professor's got it, Diz confirmed. And whatever we might have gained by letting them run all over one another wasn't worth it. Trust me.
Yeah.
Whist raised his eyebrows at Ulavu. He'd made the Protoss a conditional promise, but if they were going into combat again, everyone needed to be on the same page.
Speaking of professors and all, Ulavu has something he needs to tell everyone.
He does?
Aaron asked, turning toward him.
I do, Ulavu admitted. You have known me as a researcher. I am something more.
He drew himself up to his full height.
I am a warrior. To be specific, I am Narazim, a Dark Templar.
For a moment, no one spoke. Whist threw a surreptitious glance at each of them in turn, trying to read their reactions. Aaron was dumbfounded, with a growing tinge of awe and fear. Diz had the look of a man who'd already had suspicions and was merely having those suspicions confirmed. Tanya was nursing a quiet pain, but not a fresh one. Apparently, Ulavu had already confessed his secret to her. Whist let the silence stretch out, wondering who would break it first. Predictably, it was Diz.
Okay, he said briskly. I wondered how you and Aaron survived back there. I knew I hadn't shot those Psyalisks off you, and it would have taken some really fancy over-the-shoulder work for Whist to have done it. Welcome aboard. Next time it'll be your turn to take point.
Tanya cleared her throat.
Actually, we haven't solved the question of how Aaron survived. That's one of the things.
And without warning, the dropship slammed to a near halt and twisted halfway up onto its right side. Whist grabbed his armrests, dimly aware that the three standing behind him were scrambling for whatever handholds they could get as they were thrown off balance.
Diz!
He snapped.
Damn!
Diz breathed, sounding almost more awed than alarmed.
We've been grabbed.
We've what?
We've got 8 mutalisks hanging from the hull, Diz said tightly. Make that 10, and damn it all, 2 more have just jammed themselves into the main thrusters.
They're bringing us down?
Aaron asked, her voice trembling.
Worse, Diz pointed at the canopy as the horizon skated sideways. They're taking us where all the rest of the damn Zerg are going. They're taking us to the Psi Emitter.
Chapter 15.
Damn it all!
Matt was snarling toward the sensor station's intercom as Valerian hurried across the bridge toward it.
What the hell is the holdup with those wraiths?
What's happened?
Valerian asked as he reached Matt's side.
A swarm of mutalisks has hijacked the dropship, the Admiral said tartly. Hangar Control, I asked you a question.
Valerian felt his throat tighten as he found the proper display on the wraparound. He'd assumed Matt's explanation had been some sort of strange metaphor. It wasn't. A group of mutalisks had literally grabbed the survey team's dropship and hauled it off course. They appeared to be taking it. He swallowed a curse. Of course. They were taking it to the Psi Emitter, where every other Zerg within a 50-click radius was also gathering.
There's a glitch in the docking bay hatch, Matt gritted out. They can't get anything out.
What about the Wraith squadrons on patrol?
They're all out of position, Matt said. Either too far out or on the far side of the planet. They can't get to the dropship fast enough.
Any idea how or why this happened?
Matt shook his head. Best guess is that it has something to do with either the emitter or whoever's running the Silisks, or both. And there was only one of those factors that the Dominion had any control over.
Bluff stated, bluff called, Valerian said sourly. Fine. Shut down the emitter.
See? That's the problem, Matt growled. We can't.
You can't?
Because we didn't want the Zerg to be able to shut it down either, Matt said. So it's locked down solid. And just for good measure, the Tex also encased it in a standard field bunker before dropping it, he hissed between his teeth. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
I'm sure it did.
Valerian stared at the display. In that case, there was only one option left.
What's the smallest nuke we can deliver from orbit?
Matt's eyes widened.
You want to nuke the planet?
Just that one small section of it, Valerian assured him. He turned and caught the comm officer's eye.
Inform Hierarch Artanis that we're going to launch a nuke, he ordered. One only, and as a part of a rescue mission. It is not to be seen as the opening of full-scale operations against the planet. Make sure he understands that.
Yes, Emperor,
the officer said, clearly caught off guard but taking the order in stride.
Then, contact over Queen Zagara, Valerian added. Give her the same message, and tell her I'll speak directly to her in a few minutes.
Yes, Emperor.
He turned back to Matt.
Admiral?
We've got a 10-kiloton tactical weapon, Matt said. Usually ground-based or ship-to-ship, but it should survive entry. Valerian ran a quick calculation in his head. Assuming they could get it to the target fast enough, the drop ship should still be out of range of even the peripheral wind blast.
Get it ready, he said. Launch on my command.
Yes, sir.
Valerian turned back to the comm officer.
Any responses?
Hierarch Artanis acknowledges and expresses reservations about this action, Emperor, the officer called. But he agrees to stand by and not interfere.
His lip twitched.
Over Queen Zagara is not responding to the signal.
Valerian frowned.
She's refusing to acknowledge.
No, Emperor. There's no response at all, the officer said. The transceiver she was using earlier still registers as functioning, but no one's answering our call.
Not good, Matt murmured.
You suppose she got wind of our plans and is getting ready to run?
Pull up the images on those 7 Leviathans, Valerian ordered the tactical officer. Are they still on the ground?
Yes, Emperor,
the officer confirmed.
And we haven't seen anyone boarding them.
No, Emperor. But there are clouds and mist down there, and the visual isn't always perfect.
There could also be tunnels, Matt murmured.
Yes, Valerian murmured back.
And if Zagara and her broodmothers were about to bolt,
one thing at a time. Is the missile ready?
The tactical officer pulled up a status display.
Yes, Emperor.
Valerian looked at Matt. The Admiral's face was rigid, giving away nothing. Did he disapprove?
Probably.
In fact, he probably saw this as the sort of ham-fisted thing Valerian's father would have done. But it didn't matter what he thought. Halkman's team was still the Dominion's best hope of figuring out what was going on before they were forced to destroy the planet. Valerian wasn't going to give up the team without a fight.
Thank you.
He braced himself, wondering distantly whether he would live to regret this.
Admiral Horner, launch missile.
The dropship's sudden lurch threw Tanya completely off balance, sending both her and Aaron tumbling helplessly toward a bank of switches and knobs on the cockpit's starboard wall. Aaron was half a meter in front of Tanya, her hands scrabbling frantically for some kind of handhold, probably unaware that no matter what she did or didn't grab, Tanya would be slamming into her a fraction of a second later. And then, even as Aaron's fingers caught the edge of Wist's headrest and Tanya braced herself for impact, Ulavu's hand closed on Tanya's forearm, bringing her to a twisting and arm-wrenching halt.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, Tanya assured him, listening with half an ear as Diz and Wist shouted out the situation.
The whole dropship was rocking and shaking now as Diz tried to regain control. But it was a losing battle. There were too many Mutalisks.
They had too much combined mass, and their grips were solid. And with the main thrusters jammed, Diz didn't have enough power available to wrench the dropship free. Ulavu had come to the same conclusion.
I will deal with them, he said, pulling Tanya toward him and guiding her to a handhold.
Your jump pack is prepared, Lieutenant Dennis Hawkman.
Yeah, it's prepared.
Diz shouted over the roaring whine of the afterburners as he tried to blast the mutalisks out of the thrusters.
And no, you're not taking it.
Whist, see this control here?
There is no choice, Ulavu insisted. I can reach the mutalisks and kill them.
Not with a jump pack designed for Reaper armor, you can't, Diz insisted right back.
Whist, this is the autopilot. When the mutalisks are gone, key it on.
How will I know when they're gone? Whist asked.
We'll probably start falling out of the sky, Diz said, punching off the afterburners and unstrapping from his seat. When that happens, don't waste time admiring the scenery. Aaron, get your butt over here and strap in.
He caught Tanya's eye and gave her a brisk nod.
Come on, Pyrakeet, visor on, and let's burn us some Zerg.
The dropship had mostly stopped shaking by the time Diz had his armor and jump pack on, but a glance out the stern as he lowered the ramp showed they were still heading toward the distant psi emitter.
Okay, Diz's voice came through Tanya's headset over the shrieking of the wind. We don't have time to rig a harness, so I'll have to carry you the old-fashioned way.
Okay,
Tanya said, wincing. She wasn't exactly afraid of heights, but being lugged around 1,000 meters above the ground by someone she barely knew was not a scenario she could be happy about.
And since you don't need to hold a weapon and I don't trust my own strength, Diz continued, we'll do it face to face so that we can hold on to each other. That okay?
Sure,
Tanya said, feeling marginally better. At least this way she'd have some control of the situation.
I haven't had a good hug for weeks. Doubt this really qualifies.
Stepping in front of her, he stooped a little, offering her his upper torso armor. Tanya wrapped her arms around his shoulders, and he wrapped his around her lower ribs.
Ready? Let's go.
And with a roar from his jump pack's turbines, he launched them out the back of the dropship into the open air. Mutalisks were bat-winged flying Zerg, as big as medium-sized Dominion mech, with a curved posture that always reminded Tanya of giant hornets leading with their stingers as they swooped to battle. They were normally also among the fastest of the Zerg flyers, and Tanya had been concerned they might be able to outrun a Reaper jump pack. She needn't have worried. Burdened with the dropship's weight, and with the psi blocks probably also interfering with their speed, the mutalisks were plodding along at a greatly reduced pace, barely above that of a normal Terran jog. Diz maneuvered them into position above and behind the dropship, rotating to give Tanya a clear view of her targets. And the carnage began. She took out the two blocking the thrusters first, watching with grim satisfaction as their bodies tensed, then relaxed, then dropped silently into the forest below as she burned out their hearts and lungs. After that, she began working her way forward from the stern, hoping the psi block interference to their communication would keep them from immediately noticing their diminishing numbers. She'd killed 5 of the 12 when the others finally woke up to the threat. 2 of them detached from the hole, leaving the dropship hanging precariously in the other's grip, and swooped back toward their attackers. Tanya set her teeth, concentrating her power on the one on the left. Something behind it caught her eye.
Diz, drop, she snapped.
Diz obeyed instantly, shutting down his turbines and sending them plummeting toward the ground. The 2 mutalisks shifted course in response, angling down toward their prey, and lurched violently in midair as Ulavu crouched precariously in the dropship's open stern with Tanya's canister rifle gripped awkwardly in his large non-human hands, blasted both Zerg from behind with armor-piercing rounds. Even as the mutalisks flapped furiously trying to regain altitude, Tanya finished them off. There was an ear-splitting screech, and 2 of the other mutalisks let go of the dropship and swung to the attack. That proved to be a mistake. The dropship canted sideways, its weight now too much for the remaining Zerg to carry. Even as the mutalisks tried to regain control, the thrusters suddenly kicked out a massive blast, and the ship broke free.
No, 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 Diz groaned. Damn it, Wist, don't fiddle with the controls, just set the autopilot.
Trying, Wist's tense voice came back. No response. They must have cut something. I don't suppose you'd like to get your butt back in here.
Diz cursed and leaned over, and Tanya tightened her grip as he threw power to his turbines.
Yeah, we're on our way. Watch it. Your nose is dipping. Grab the yoke and ease it back a couple of millimeters. I said back a couple of millimeters.
I did, Wist said. It's not responding either.
Must have injected glaive worms, Diz muttered. They've gotten into the gravs and the thruster controls.
Abruptly, he shot straight up into the air. The move nearly broke Tanya's grip, but Diz tightened his arms around her until she got her own arms resettled.
Okay, I'm looking down course, he said. Looks like you've got a small clearing almost dead ahead. You're going to aim for that.
There was another burst from the thrusters, sending the dropship leaping ahead.
And turn the damn thrusters off, he added tartly. The master throttle's between the seats.
Yeah, yeah, got it, Wist said.
Any thoughts on how to slow down without thrusters or gravs?
You're about to make friends with the trees, Diz said. You've still got some gravs, so you start by hitting the very tops, no more than 3 or 4 meters down. As you slow down, start edging a little deeper into the heavier branches. Use the pedals to change your pitch. With luck, the grav will hold out until you're slow enough to ease down into the clearing.
And if it doesn't?
Then you're about to become a bulldozer, Diz said bluntly. Strap in tight, and hope like crazy the rivet heads who built the thing took pride in their work. Oh, and tell Ulavu to...
He paused.
Where'd Ulavu go?
Back inside, Tanya told him. He left after I took out the rest of the mutalisks.
Oh, right, I missed that. Anyway, tell Ulavu to strap down too.
Already done, Wist said. Anything else?
Nothing any of us have time for, Diz said. Good luck.
Is there anything we can do? Tanya murmured.
Like I said, not enough time, Diz said, his voice tense. Even if we could catch them, I'd never make it to the cockpit. He paused. Nice work with the mutalisks, by the way.
Thanks, Tanya said.
Considering that the dropship was teetering on the edge of destruction, all their heroics seemed to have been for nothing. And then, off to her right, a sudden flicker caught her eye. She turned her head to see a fading spot of light just at the horizon. Frowning, she keyed in her visor's optical enhancement. Rising just above the fading light was a small, mushroom-shaped cloud.
Whoa, Diz said. The sail must be over.
What sail? Tanya asked, her mind trying to sort through the flash in the cloud. A nuke, obviously, but when did Zerg start using nukes?
That sail on premium creep I mentioned earlier, Diz said. They're not all flying that away anymore.
Tanya looked around. There were 3 flying Zerg between them and the horizon, but none of them was flying northeast. And then it clicked.
They nuked the psi emitter, she said.
They, whoa, what?
A nuke just went off right about where we were guessing the emitter was, Tanya said, nodding in the direction of the blast. The question is, who took it out, us or the Zerg?
Must have been us, Diz said. Zerg don't use tech.
Well, us or the Protoss.
Come on, Wist, come on!
Tanya looked back to the drama taking place below. The dropship was plowing through the trees just as Diz had instructed. It was visibly slowing to the point that Diz and Tanya were finally starting to close the distance. She caught her breath. It was slowing, but not slowing enough.
Diz? You're still too hot, Wist, Diz warned. You've got to get deeper. Don't worry about scratching the paint.
Can't, Wist said. Gravs are twitching at me.
Diz hissed out a curse. Then shut them down.
Say again.
Shut down the gravs, Diz repeated. Master levers forward of the throttle. Twist the handle 90 clockwise, then pull back.
Diz.
You're going to pancake anyway, Diz cut him off. You need to be in the clearing when you do it.
Great. Okay, here goes.
The dropship sank abruptly, and even over the wind noise, Tanya could hear the much louder crunching of wood as the ship tore through the larger branches. but it was still 5 meters up as it passed the last line and shot into the clearing. Tanya bit her lip as it fell like a rock, slammed to the ground, and skidded over the rough surface. She held her breath. The dropship was nearly to the next line of trees when it finally bounced and swerved to a halt.
"Whist?" Diz called tentatively.
"Yeah, we're okay," Whist said. "Aaron, Ulavu? Yeah, everyone's okay. I don't think this thing's gonna fly again, though."
"No kidding," Diz said, and Tanya could hear the relief in his voice. "Okay, start pulling out everything we might need. Those glaive worms are still wandering around in there, and we don't want them chewing on the spare C-14s.
"Right. We're on it."
High on the list of things every colonel knew not to do was interrupt an admiral's conversation. That went double when the admiral in question was conversing with an old friend. It went triple when the old friend was the emperor. And so Cruikshank waited as patiently as he could while the two men had their little chat by the tactical officer's display wraparound. Of course, considering they were discussing the possible consequences of a technically unprovoked nuking of a technically non-combatant planet, he was more than willing to give them whatever time and space they needed. Their dialogue began winding down, and Cruikshank took the last 2 steps necessary to put him into conversational range.
"Admiral."
Admiral Horner looked up.
"Yes, Colonel, what is it?"
"When you have a moment, sir," Cruikshank said, "I'd like to discuss my group's next mission."
The Admiral and the Emperor glanced at each other, probably wondering which of them had authorized even the planning stage for a new ground mission.
"Go ahead,"
Horner said.
"I've been talking to Commander Rahas on the Protoss mothership," Cruikshank said. "Our conclusion was..."
"Who authorized you to talk to the Protoss?"
Valerian interrupted.
"No one, Emperor,"
Cruikshank said, tensing reflexively.
"It was on my own initiative. There was nothing official about the conversation. We were simply 2 soldiers comparing notes."
"And Commander Rahas is?"
"Hierarch Artanis's chief ground force commander," Cruikshank said. "He was Sagaya's second in command before the Point 2 fiasco."
Valerian's lip might have twitched at the word fiasco, but he merely nodded.
"Continue?"
"Yes, Emperor."
At least the Emperor didn't randomly cannonball into the shallow end the way his father sometimes had.
"Our conclusion was that, as you anticipated, the Psi emitter will have drawn a lot of the Zerg away from Point 3. Since flying Zerg are faster than groundies, most of the flyers should have gotten there first, which further suggests that the nuke we just dropped will have taken out a fair percentage of them."
"That was our conclusion as well," Horner agreed. "Is there more?"
"Yes, sir," Cruikshank said. "Now that the emitter's gone, we expect that whoever's controlling those Zerg will send them back to protect Point 3. If the dropship hadn't been attacked, the team would have gotten there well ahead of most of the returning Zerg. With the team now on foot, it's going to be a race."
He pursed his lips.
"Enough reason right there for them to be attacked."
"It won't be a race if we send another dropship down to carry them the last 30 clicks, Valerian said.
"We could do that, Emperor, yes," Cruikshank said. "The problem I see is twofold. First, sending anything down will immediately pinpoint the team's location, which will allow the enemy to prepare ambushes along the way. Right now, with their psi blocks running, they're a lot less noticeable. Second, we've already seen how vulnerable a dropship is to aerial attack."
"We could send some wraiths down to escort them," Horner said.
"Except that Gist has a lot more mutalisks than we have wraiths," Valerian murmured. "And not all of them will have been taken out by the nuke. So, you're suggesting, Colonel, that we leave Halkman's team on foot?"
"Yes, Emperor," Cruikshank said. "The trip will take longer, but they've got powered suits, and the images we're getting don't indicate any major injuries. And again, right now, they're more or less invisible to local Zerg."
"Or at least harder to spot," Valerian said. "As you say, though, they're now racing the returning Zerg. I assume you have a suggestion to offer?"
"We give them a buffer," Cruikshank said. "By that, I mean, we put a line of troops, mechs, and Protoss on the ground about 15 clicks out from Point 3, angled against the direction the Zerg will come from. We'll hopefully be able to hold them off long enough for Hawkman to get inside and pull the samples we need.
You just said the Zerg would see any dropships we sent in, Valerian reminded him.
Yes, but we won't care, Cruikshank said. It doesn't matter if they know where we are, since we're there to fight anyway. And we won't be doing any horizontal flying, so they'll have less time to gather enough flyers to mess with us.
There were a lot of Zerg heading for the emitter, Horner warned. If they're all under enemy control, that'll be a damn big plateful for your force to handle.
Cruikshank gave a small shrug.
That's what we're paid for, sir.
What's the terrain look like? Valerian asked.
Here's the spot, Emperor.
Cruikshank pulled out his datapad and keyed for the aerial view.
It's a section of rolling grassland between two forested areas. Nice visibility. The enemy has to come at us over open ground, and we can't be sneaked up on. It's situated between a fast-moving river and marshland on the southeast, and this cliff line on the north.
The scale says the area is about 800 meters wide, Horner pointed out. That's a lot of territory for 40 Marines to cover.
I'd also be taking a second Warhound and however many Goliaths you can spare from shipboard defense, Cruikshank said. Plus, Rahas says they still have 10 Templar and 10 Narazim they can deploy, plus a sentry or two for close-in support. He also says they could probably bring a pair of Phoenixes, which would then be available for air support.
That still leaves 13 meters for each Marine or Protoss warrior, Horner persisted. Worse, really, since Protoss infantry usually don't use ranged weapons, and will probably have to bunch closer together to hold their section of the line. Either way, if you get swarmed, I don't see how you'll keep from being overwhelmed.
We can handle it, sir, Cruikshank insisted. Anyway, there's no other suitable spot for 10 clicks either way. Most of the rest of that area is forested, which limits our fields of fire. And once the river bends due south, there would be too long a battle line for us to cover.
What if you set up right at Point 3? Valerian asked.
I'm worried that would cut things a little too close, Cruikshank said. If Hawkman's team gets delayed, they could find their way blocked by a battle, and we need to get them inside Point 3. Because unless you want to send Dr. Kogan down with us, there's no one except Dr. Wyland who knows how to take the samples you want.
He tapped the datapad screen.
This is our best bet to slow down the Zerg long enough for the survey team to do that.
Valerian and Horner exchanged looks, and Cruikshank could sense a nonverbal conversation going on. This Protoss force, Valerian said, turning back to Cruikshank. Is that still you and Rahas talking theory? Or has Hierarch Artanis given the green light for them to join in?
Rahas is waiting for your approval before approaching the Hierarch, Emperor, Cruikshank said. But he assures me, there's no question that he'll authorize the action.
Again, Horner and Valerian looked at each other.
You make a good case, Colonel, Valerian said. Just one question. Why?
Cruikshank frowned.
As I said before, Emperor, it's our job.
Not why you're willing to risk your life for the survey team's mission, Valerian said. Why you're asking for the Protoss to be in on the operation. I was under the impression you didn't like the Protoss.
And that you certainly don't trust them, Horner added.
Cruikshank felt his lip twitch.
Permission to speak freely, sir, Valerian nodded.
Go ahead.
You're right. I don't like or trust Protoss, Cruikshank said. But what I saw at Point 2, what the Sialisks did to them and how fast they did it, scared the hell out of me. This has to be stopped, and it has to be stopped here, or the war's going to start all over again. We can't afford that. I don't have enough soldiers and mechs to do it alone, neither do the Protoss. That's just how the battle logic works out.
Very well put, Colonel, Valerian said.
All right. Give Rahas a call and let him know we're sending you and everyone we can spare from basic shipboard security. Then, get your team together and report back when you're ready.
Yes, Emperor.
Cruikshank nodded to Horner.
Admiral?
He started to turn away.
One more thing, Colonel, Valerian said. You asked for permission to speak freely, but I didn't hear anything that could be construed as improper or inappropriate. Why that specific request?
Cruikshank grimaced. I admitted I was frightened, Emperor. Official Dominion military policy is that we're never frightened.
Ah, Valerian said, a small smile touching his lips. Welcome to the real world, Colonel.
Thank you, Emperor, Cruikshank said soberly. Actually, I've been living here for quite a while. Excuse me, please. I have orders to carry out.
Chapter 16.
Erin didn't notice the ache in her side until she tried to lift the flamethrower's fuel tank and something seemed to go pop. She managed to lug the thing outside anyway, but from that point the pain got progressively worse. Eventually, Wist noticed.
Trouble?
He asked as he set a rack of Gauss rifles beside the fuel tank.
I'm fine.
He raised his eyebrows.
In Marine talk, I'm fine usually means like hell I am, he said. Come on, we don't have time for games.
It's nothing, she said. Just some pain in my side.
Where?
He touched her armor below her arm.
Here?
A little lower.
Yeah, Wist looked around. Diz, we've got a cracked rib over here.
How bad? Diz called back. Can you travel?
Yes, of course, Erin said. I'm okay, really.
Good to hear it. Wist pointed to a large tree at the edge of the clearing. Over there. Sit down. We'll get the rest of the stuff out.
I can help.
You can help by sitting down, Wist said firmly. We don't have time for a closer look, and probably don't have anything aboard that'll do better than the CMC's compression suit anyway.
Yes, sir, Erin said with a sigh.
To be honest, a short break would probably do her good. She eased herself down by the tree he'd indicated. It was more than a little embarrassing to sit idly by while everyone else worked. Still, Wist was in charge, and he'd given her an order. Though, the relaxation would come to a quick and violent end if some wandering Zerg spotted her. Was she still inside the magic zone of sort of invisibility from the two psi blocks? She hoped so. She hadn't carried a weapon since the Point One Cavern and her attempts to use Wist's spare Gauss rifle. As Tanya had said earlier, she was lucky to have come out of that alive. So why had she come out of it alive? They'd never really answered that question. Erin herself had certainly avoided thinking about it. Luckily, there'd been plenty of other things to keep her mind busy over the past hour or so. But all those excuses were gone now that she was just sitting here. Why was she still alive? Had the attacking Zerg sized them up, realized she was the most harmless, and decided to concentrate on the others first? No, that made no sense. Not when a couple of quick swings of razor-sharp claws could have cut through her armor and killed her on the spot. Or at least, those claws could have taken off the arm that held the rifle and really made sure she was harmless. Surely one of the Zerg could have spared the half-second that would have taken. Because she was a xenobiologist? Wist had suggested that. But Tanya had promptly shot that one down, unless there was something about the Adastra in their pods that was designed to fool a trained xenobiologist and no one else. She snorted, the movement giving her ribs a fresh twinge. Right. No one sets traps that subtle. Besides, she was the only one who had first raised the question of how the Silisks and the Adastra were connected. If that was the big secret, it was already out of the hat and should have been grounds for her being the first of the team to be targeted. Something caught her eye, and she looked up to see another pair of Mutalisks flapping their way across the sky. She tensed, wondering if they'd been sent to finish the job the first pack had started. She watched them, ready to shout out a warning if they turned and dived. To her relief, they continued on without even pausing. Maybe objects on the ground weren't of any real interest to them, at least not when they themselves were that high. It was only when intruders were in their territory that they'd taken enough interest to attack. Only when intruders were in their territory.
For a long moment she thought about it, her spinning brain trying to work through the logic. She called up the reports Cruikshank had sent and read them through again. She thought about it some more. Then, after levering herself carefully to her feet, she crossed the clearing to where the others were working. Whis looked up as she approached.
"I thought I told you to sit down," he said.
"Yes, you did," she confirmed. "I have a question." There must have been something in her tone because all four of them paused in their work.
"Is it important?" Whist asked.
"Very important," Aaron assured him. "Do you remember what Diz said about the Sialisks being terrible bodyguards for the pods?"
"Sure," Whist said.
"And Tanya pointed out that they only lost because of bad luck and unexpected circumstances?"
"Again, sure."
"She was wrong," Aaron said softly. "It wasn't bad luck. It was deliberate."
"Explain," Ulavu said. Aaron swallowed.
"The battle at Focal Point 2. The Sialisks had taken down most of the Protoss and were trying to move the pods out of the cavern. The only thing that stopped them was the arrival of Colonel Cruikshank's team."
"According to Cruikshank, anyway," Whist said. "Was he wrong?"
"Not from his point of view," Aaron said. "But we know better. See, there were Mutalisks at the battle, I checked. They attacked while the Dominion force was trying to save the Protoss. Mutalisks like the ones that attacked us and knocked us out of the sky." She pointed at the sky. "So why didn't they do the same thing to the Dominion force on its way down?"
Whist and Diz looked at each other.
"We were traveling horizontally," Diz said, a little uncertainly. "The Dominion ships would have been coming in vertically. That would have made them harder to hit."
"They hit the Protoss shuttle on its way down just fine," Tanya reminded them. "Took out its psionic boosters, remember?" "And they didn't even try to stop the dropships," Aaron said. "There's nothing in the report about any attack until the troops and mechs were already deployed." "They were moving the pods," Tanya murmured. "Disassembling them from the nutrient base structure couldn't have been easy to do. They must have started long before Cruikshank even landed."
"While they were already beating the snot out of the Protoss," Whist said. "So why move them?"
"That's not something that makes sense?" Aaron asked.
"No," Ulavu told her. "The interior ramps and turns provide effective choke points. The far better strategy would have been for the Sialisks to contain and surround their attackers."
"Especially since they were winning," Whist said. "Wait a minute. The Protoss disruptor. It was already inside, ready to go off. Could that have been why they were moving the pods?"
"The disruptor should never have been allowed into the cavern to begin with," Ulavu said. "Even if the Mutalisks were unable to block the Terran dropships, they should certainly have been able to intercept the disruptor and keep it outside."
"Damn," Diz muttered. "Are we saying what I think we're saying?"
"We're saying you were right," Whist said. "The Sialisks aren't guarding the pods. They're trying to get them destroyed."
"Not just get them destroyed," Tanya said grimly, "but get them destroyed by us."
She nodded toward the sky. "That's why the Mutalisks didn't come back and finish the job here. They want us to get to Point 3 so that we can destroy the pods there for them."
"Or they want us to get to Point 3 and get ourselves killed, thereby goading the Dominion into destroying the pods," Whist said. "Probably doesn't make much difference to them."
"And furthermore, to destroy them without anyone getting the samples that would show Adastra and Sialisks aren't forms of the same species," Tanya said. "That's why they were moving the pods at Point 2, and why they let the disruptor in. They figured they had to make it look to Cruikshank like he was going to lose containment, otherwise they couldn't push him into blasting the cavern." "And that's why I'm alive," Aaron said, an unpleasant shiver running through her. She'd hoped desperately that there was a flaw in her reasoning, something that the others would find. Only they hadn't.
"After they killed the rest of you in Point 1, they needed someone to go running back to the Dominion to tell them how horrible the Sialisks are. That was going to be me."
"Because you were the most harmless," Diz murmured.
And because you'd have seen the same markings on the backs of the Silisks and the Adastra and would hopefully draw the conclusion they wanted you to draw, Tanya said. They probably assumed you were more observant with that sort of thing than the rest of us would be.
I wonder how they managed to get the same markings on both, Diz said.
He who created the Silisks would have manipulated the genetics to bring about that precise result, Ulavu said.
He? Wist asked.
He means Abathur, Aaron said. He has to be the one behind this. Even Zagara credited him with creating the Adastra.
But she also said he was loyal to the Swarm, Wist reminded her. This doesn't exactly sound like loyalty to me.
Unless Zagara herself is the one behind it, Tanya said.
I hope to hell not, Diz said. Because if she is, she's got the whole planet behind her.
In which case we're totally screwed, Wist said.
Or she is, Tanya offered. Between the Dominion and the Protoss, there's enough firepower up there to turn this place back into an orbiting cinder. Maybe that's exactly what someone's going for, Aaron said.
But that makes no sense, Ulavu objected. Who stands to gain by the destruction of Gist?
Who knows, Wist said. Some other group of Zerg? Some rogue Protoss faction? Maybe Sarah damn Kerrigan herself. And by the way, just having firepower doesn't mean you get to deliver it. Don't forget that Zagara's got 7 Leviathans to call on. Not to mention however many Scourge and Devourer she could send against us.
Doesn't matter, Tanya said firmly. Not that part. Not to us anyway. What happens up there is someone else's problem. Our problem is to reach point 3 and get the samples that'll hopefully prove whether we're right or just spitting in the wind. She looked at Ulavu, and Aaron had the sense that the two of them were sharing something deep and private. And we're all we've got, she added. So let's get this stuff on our backs and get moving.
And by our backs, you mean mostly mine, Wist said sourly.
Not our fault you and Aaron are the two with the heavy-duty CMCs, Diz said. Do you think we should let Crookshank know about this?
Shutting down the Psyblocks isn't a terrific idea, Wist said reluctantly, looking around. But yeah, this is probably the time and place to do it.
Couldn't you or Diz go off a ways and just shut down that one? Tanya suggested. That way not everyone will be exposed.
No point, Wist told her. The Zerg probably have a good beat on the crash site, so they already know we're here.
That means that, for once, shutting off the blocks doesn't tell them anything new, Diz added. So the plan is to shut off both blocks, make a quick report, then turn them back on and make tracks for point 3.
Right, Wist said. Once we're gone, they can pound on the dropship to their little heart's content.
He fiddled with something inside his armor.
Okay, mine's off. You want to talk or should I?
I'll do it, Diz said.
He did something with his armor.
Hawkman to Hyperion, Hawkman to Hyperion.
Is there trouble? Tanya asked.
Not getting through, Diz said.
Ah, damn. What?
Wist demanded.
The dropship's signal booster is glitched, Diz said. Probably the glaive worms again.
I thought our suits had enough power by themselves, Aaron said.
They do, Diz said. Unfortunately, some tech genius set things up so that if our comms are in range of the dropship, they automatically relay through its booster. No booster, no signal.
Can't you switch it over?
I'm sure somebody can, Diz said sourly. Unfortunately, they didn't teach us the subtle tech stuff in Zerg shooting school.
So, we need either distance or a shredded booster, Wist said. And since we don't want to wake up the neighbors with a grenade, I vote for distance.
Agreed, Diz said reluctantly. And at this point, we might as well just wait until we're nearly there. That way, if we attract company, we'll have some place to duck in out of the rain.
I don't think Crookshank will like being left hanging that long, Aaron warned.
He'll get over it, Diz said. So, what are we bringing?
Less than I thought, Wist said. Couple of spare Gauss rifles. Lots of extra mags. Leave the flamethrower.
I'll carry the flamethrower, Aaron interrupted. And anything else you need me to. I thought you were hurt, Tanya said. I just need to learn to let my suit's servos do most of the work, Aaron said. But the flamethrower? You've proved the Silasks don't like heat, Aaron pointed out. Diz proved they burn if you get them hot enough. Besides, walls of flame can sometimes come in handy.
You're awfully soldierly all of a sudden, Diz said, frowning at her. Any reason in particular?
I'm just trying to be part of the team.
Diz and Whist exchanged glances.
Fine, Whist said. Grab whatever you think you can carry and let's go. Tanya, her CMC has some anchor points for gear attachment. Give her a hand, will you?
They didn't believe her, of course. Aaron knew that. But how could she tell them the truth? She couldn't tell them that during the war and its aftermath, she'd nurtured a private but enduring contempt for the Protoss for the burning of Chausara. Never mind that they thought they had a good reason. Never mind that they thought they were halting the spread of Zerg infestation. The cold, grim, bottom line was that they'd killed innocents for nothing, and intelligent beings ought to be better than that. Now she, Dr. Aaron Weiland, so high and mighty and incomparably moral, had done exactly the same thing to the Adastra. She winced, her ribs twinging with the sudden shift in weight as Tanya attached the fuel tank to her armor. She couldn't bring back the innocent lives she'd helped destroy, but she had one final chance to preserve this last group, and she would do whatever she had to.
I'm making about 30 clicks to point 3. Whist said when they were ready. That's 2 hours at a decent jog.
I think we can do better than that, Diz said.
I think we damn well better do better than that, Whist said. Move it out, and watch each other's backs. Remember, they don't need all of us to get to point 3 alive.
The shuttle dropped to the hangar deck with a dull thud. Its hatch opened, and a single Protoss emerged. He looked around, spotted Crookshank standing with his troops and mechs, and strode toward them.
Great, Crookshank muttered to no one in particular, for about the fourth time in the past hour.
Bad enough that he was about to take on a whole planet full of Zerg with 40 Marines, 3 Reapers, 5 Goliaths, and his last remaining Warhound. Bad enough that fielding even that minuscule force had all but stripped the Hyperion of any internal security. But to order him to ride in a Protoss shuttle instead of loading everyone aboard good, solid Dominion dropships was just plain over the line. The Protoss stopped.
I am Alika,
his voice came in Crookshank's brain.
I am a Nerazim, a Dark Templar. I speak for Rahas. You are Colonel Abram Crookshank?
I am. Crookshank confirmed, clamping a lid hard on his sudden surge of extra annoyance. Typical arrogant Protoss. Deliberately using short sentences as if his listener were a child struggling his way through a first reader book.
I command the Dominion ground forces.
Alika's eyes flicked over the Marines, Reapers, and mechs standing silently behind Crookshank.
I would think a major would be a more appropriate commander for such a small force. Were you not informed of the agreement regarding security for your ships?
Crookshank ground his teeth.
You mean the one about your ships guaranteeing our ship's safety in case of a Zerg attack?
That is the agreement I refer to, yes, Alika said.
There is thus no need to leave any of your war force aboard your ships.
Sure, Crookshank said. You'll forgive me if I don't simply take your word for it. The irritating part was that he had been ordered to do just that, to trust that the Protoss would beat off any Zerg that tried to attack and board the Dominion ships, and to take everything he had left to the surface. He'd done it, albeit under protest, but there was no way he was going to tell Alika that. Protoss thought too highly of themselves as it was.
But don't worry about our numbers, he added. We'll do just fine.
He hesitated, but it was too good an opportunity to pass up.
Better than your people did at point 2, anyway.
Alika bristled, his eyes flickering with blue light. Crookshank tensed, but the eyes went back to normal as the Protoss regained control of his emotions. Apparently,
He and the deck crew weren't going to be treated to the sight of a Dark Templar flashing some psionic energy around the hangar.
"We were taken by surprise,"
he insisted stiffly.
"It will not happen that way again."
"I'm sure it won't," Crookshank said. "But enough chit-chat. We're ready to board whenever you've got space cleared out for us."
"You may come now," Alika said. "You will take care not to get in our way. Either aboard our ship or when we reach the planetary surface."
Without waiting for a response, probably not really wanting one either, he turned and strode back toward the shuttle.
"And people wonder why I hate Protoss," Crookshank muttered.
"All right, you heard him,"
he went on, raising his volume to drill sergeant level.
"Mount up! Mind you don't step on anyone's toes along the way."
The Marines set off in brisk double time, the Reapers behind them, the Goliaths clumping along at the rear. Grabbing the handholds on his warhound, Crookshank started climbing to the cockpit. Still, at least Alika was an honestly arrogant SOB Protoss. Crookshank didn't like them, but he knew how to work with them. Not like that wimpy waste of space researcher Ulavu, whom Valerian had insisted on sending with the survey team. He snorted.
"You will take care not to get in our way," Alika had warned. Better he should warn Ulavu not to get in Halkman's way.
Bad enough that the team was saddled with a human civilian, but to have two civilians was just pushing the hell out of the numbers. And Protoss or not, the bottom line was that Ulavu was a civilian. If his lack of military competence got someone killed, he would damn well answer for it. Crookshank would personally guarantee that would be an experience the Protoss would never forget, no matter how hard or how long he tried.